Jason, the Bears just can't play a normal game, can they? We'll break down the overtime loss to the Vikings and all that went wrong and a little bit that went right coming up on Hallis Intrigue. I'm Patrick Finley. He's Jason Leisure. Jason, we're sitting in the press box at Soldier Field. The Bears just lost to the Vikings in overtime after doing something pretty remarkable in that they were the third team, or the third time in 31 tries this year that an NFL team's recovered an onside kick. They grab it with 22 seconds left. Caleb Williams throws a completion, and then Cairo Santos makes a field goal to force OT. This is a game that, with a minute and a half to play, the Bears trailed by 11. So that part was good. Getting up to that point was more madness. And you're left here thinking that the Bears are trying to find more creative ways every week to absolutely break your heart.
Quite a finish.
Yeah.
It wasn't quite the heartbreaker of doing everything right and then a very fluky thing happens to you, like what happened in the end of the Washington game. I know that Tyreek Stevenson did his part in that, but he might have done everything right and it still happened. And the blocked field goal against Green Bay, you know, you don't see that a lot. It was rare. It was unusual, Pat, to be watching a game where do you ever track on ESPN.com the percent?
Yeah, the
win probability or whatever it is. So it's rare to see a game where the other team is at 98.2, I think Minnesota was. Mm-hmm. Or no. Minnesota was 99.9.
Wow.
When it was 27-16. Mm-hmm. Do I have the score right?
Yeah. It wound up being 30-27, so yes.
Okay. And to see the Bears flip that instead of it happening to them as it did a few times last year, then in overtime, they just kind of ran out of gas, and you know the defense had chances. They had a huge third down opportunity, couldn't stop them, and there was quite a bit of that today.
In overtime, I believe the Vikings had 1st and 20, 1st and 15, 2nd and 12, and 3rd and 10, and they marched all the way down.
It was there to take.
Yeah,
it was there to take, and the Bears don't. And now they are 4-7, having lost 5 in a row. And we've been trying to tell you guys since probably July.
Maybe May.
Probably since July or earlier. No later than July were we telling you about this schedule. And if you think it has been a step up in difficulty for the Bears to take on the Packers and the Vikings the last 2 weeks, oh my goodness, what awaits them just 4 days after this.
They have the best team in football, the Lions, at 11:30 a.m. on Thursday after they played an overtime game in the Viking, or in the Lions, at least pulled away late on Sunday. That's a pretty nasty turnaround, even for a team that has reason to feel good about itself, and this is not one of those. You know, we talk about the different ways they've lost between the Hail Mary in D.C., or the blocked field goal last week. There was another one of those today, and we'll get to that later. But Cole Kmet was saying after the game, you know, he was just sitting on the sideline being like, please, can we just have one? Like, he just wanted one break. And the Bears got their break in the onside kick, and to their credit, were able to force overtime.
They cashed in on the break.
They cashed in on it, and I guess that makes this feel a little less crazy, or a little less heartbreaking than last week. The other thing is that Caleb Williams took another step, and big picture, that is the thing that matters when you're trying to project out what this franchise is going to look like in 2, 3, 5 years. Mm-hmm. And he handled the Vikings blitz really well. He threw with conviction. He did not turn the ball over. He hasn't turned the ball over since London. Caleb Williams is having himself a little bit of a resurgence here in the last 2 weeks. Jason, read me those stats.
32 of 47 passing, 340 yards. 2 touchdowns, no turnovers, a 103.1 passer rating. And
he led them in rushing as well, 6 carries for
33 yards. Yeah, the perspective that you're sharing, you and I are aligned on this, especially once the season gets to the point it was last week, I think, where it's 4-6. And I'm now doing an advertisement for another outlet, but do you ever use the New York Times playoff probability thing? It's really interesting. If you guys haven't seen it, it's helpful. But I was messing around with it, seeing like they had the Bears at less than a 1% chance of winning, I mean, of making the playoffs this past week after losing to Green Bay. And I'm kind of messing around, changing the results of the games. I'm like, what does it take to get them kind of in the mix? and you could move their next four games, including the one against Minnesota. You could have moved all four of those to wins for them, and it still was 21% chance of making the playoffs. So all of that is a long way to say the development of Caleb Williams has always been the most important thing about this season. It has now become the only important thing about this season. So if you're looking at it from that perspective, which you and I do, Matt Eberflus doesn't, and some part of the fan base might still be holding out hope that they're going to just suddenly do a bunch of things that you haven't seen them do yet. This was a great game for the future of the Bears because it was a great game for Caleb Williams. I was thoroughly impressed by what he did today. He was good from start to finish. He was great with the game on the line. And he did it against, this is the best defense he's faced.
Yeah.
This is a great defense with a absolute mastermind at defensive coordinator in Brian Flores. And Caleb was on it today.
He was on it. He was helped at the end of the game, obviously, by a kickoff return that got them to midfield. And then playing against a defense that was playing a shell coverage, essentially, the way you're supposed to when you're up 11 with a minute to play. And then he makes the best throw of the game for my money, and he did have a couple really good ones. After they get the onside kick, you know, he throws to DJ Moore kind of, you know, up the middle of the field. And that is where everybody in the building knew the Bears needed to put the ball, both in the area of the field and the distance. And he put it over a linebacker and underneath the safety. And, boy, that's, you know, Komet was saying, like, that's not something I've seen here before. And maybe that's damning with faint praise. But, yeah, it gives you reason to think that the Bears have found something in Caleb Williams. It also gives you reason to think, either A, Thomas Brown is really good, or B, Shane Waldron was really bad.
Oh, or C, both of those. And the rave reviews, Patrick, that Caleb Williams has been giving Thomas Brown are great and horrible. It's great that they finally have the right guy. It's horrible that they were doing anything other than this for the first nine games, Pat, the first how many months of this guy's NFL career. That's a big deal.
It predates his NFL career. I mean, they were putting in Shane Waldron's playbook when they visited USC in March.
Right. Yes.
They were putting it in
later, maybe March.
That month.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it predates his eligibility as a professional athlete.
It's really problematic when you hear the things that Caleb says about Thomas Brown, the good qualities, the improvements that have been made in the way he's been coached the last 2 weeks, and they are things that should have been so obvious to Matt Eberflus. I'm blown away when I hear Caleb talking about, yeah, one improvement we made is we get the play call in faster. What? how was that not happening before? That's crazy. Today he's talking about Thomas Brown and his personality and how it resonates with him, his aura, Caleb said. And the way that Thomas...
He didn't want to sound too hippy-dippy. I think he realizes that coming from L.A., he's got to tone down the L.A.-ness. So he said, I don't want to use the word, but aura. Okay, continue.
What he was describing, the way I heard it, and this was right after the game, he was talking about the way Thomas Brown has coached him to play the position. Take out the game operation stuff, the getting the play call and stuff. Just the approach to the position. And my interpretation of what Caleb's saying is Thomas has cleared up a lot of things that were not clear before. Thomas has clarified the way Caleb approaches the position and now is able to play freely. And while we are at about the time in the season when you would think he would be getting better, I don't think it's a coincidence that lines up with Thomas Brown taking over as offensive coordinator. And that is just... It was the right move by Matt Eberflus at the time, but it was the right move on a sinking ship that is damning of Matt Eberflus's judgment that they had originally interviewed this guy, Patrick, and chose Shane Waldron over him.
Yeah, now if everything goes the way we think it's going to go, Thomas Brown's not going to work for them next year either. You know, unless something so remarkable happens that the Bears
go... He could be the head coach.
Yeah, that the Bears sit there and go, we got to keep this guy.
I bet you right now Thomas Brown... I doubt he's their next head coach, but I bet he gets an interview.
Yeah.
I bet Thomas Brown gets a legit interview
head
coach, and the Caleb endorsement would help.
It's one thing the Bears have never done, really, when you look at all of the different moves they've made. The Bears sure as hell have hired guys who've never been a head coach before, because there for a long time, that was the cheapest way to do it. But promoting from within, it would be interesting.
Well, odd move in the NFL in general to fire the head coach and replace him with an assistant already on staff.
Yeah.
Your actual contender for head coach you'll see Thursday morning.
Ben Johnson.
Enjoy.
Ben Johnson.
Bears fans tuning in on Thanksgiving to watch your, I assume, soon-to-be exiting head coach take on your, I assume, future head coach for 2025, Ben Johnson. Can I tell you something I'm really hung up on from this game?
Yeah.
I know this isn't what everybody's going to talk about. This isn't the headline. This isn't what you're going to see on ESPN and the highlights and everything. You're going to see that crazy ending and the game-winning field goal. This was a bad game for Matt Eberflus, Patrick. I got a lot of Matt Eberflus problems here today. And the biggest of which, I'm really hung up on this. Let me stay on this for just a minute.
Okay.
The Bears have a crucial play in the third quarter. They're down 17-10. This game is still in reach. They're going for it on 4th-and-4 at the Minnesota 27. The problem is Matt Eberflus knows that, but not everybody else knows that. So we're watching them. We're thinking, you know, from the 27, you could kick. You're only down 7. You could kick. It's fully on the table to kick a field goal.
If you trusted your field goal unit, you could try that.
I like Matt Eberflus going for it there. Mm-hmm. But, man, Patrick, this guy, even when he gets it right, he gets it wrong. You have Cairo Santos and Scott Daly running onto the field. That's their kicker and long snapper. As the offense is staying out there, and the offense, it seemed like maybe knew what was going on, although Caleb, I don't know. It seemed like the offense probably knew they were going for it, but then the offensive players seeing those guys come, the specialists come onto the field, confused them. Yeah. So you have all of this chaos going on a crucial 4th-and-4. In that, Caleb Williams mishears the play call from Thomas Brown. They don't even run the play they intend to run. They don't run the play Thomas Brown called because Caleb didn't hear it right. Clock's ticking down this whole time, and you can see as they line up for this, I'm pointing to the spot right now for Patrick as we overlook Soldier Field late at night on Sunday.
It's an audio medium.
That's why I'm describing it.
Okay.
And you can see that there's still disarray at the line of scrimmage, Pat. You can see that Caleb is trying to get everybody settled and trying to do some last-minute checks, and there's just not enough time. They get the playoff at the last second, and it goes poorly. Go ahead.
He throws a little outside hitch. To Keenan Allen, he throws it a little high. Keenan Allen reaches and touches it with both hands, and he's got really good hands.
Keenan told me he should have caught it.
Yeah, and it's a mess. I'll add on to your frustration in that, you know, maybe you bang a timeout there to get settled, knowing that it's an important play, even though it's in the second half, and you should be more
judicious with your timeouts.
But they were already down a timeout because early in the second half, the Bears let Jordan Addison sprint down the sideline for 69 yards.
Matt Eberflus challenged it, trying to save about 30 yards off that.
Yeah, saying that he had been shoved out of bounds. And he was. I mean, I thought the replay showed he was out of bounds, but it didn't. So now Eberflus is down a timeout because also he is the worst non-rookie head coach in the league at
challenges?
Throwing challenges.
He's 0 for 4. Pat.
That, 2 for 9, I think.
Caleb was saying you can't call a timeout there because they'd already burned one, mm-hmm. and he's expecting this game to be close at the end, and it was close at the time. I still say you burn of all of this inexcusable screw-ups that led to this point, I say you still call a timeout there when you as the head coach see that things aren't right. On a 4th-and-4 at the opponent 27, that's a huge scoring opportunity. I mean, you have 3 points in the bag right there if you choose to kick, assuming that you don't get it blocked again.
Yeah.
But like that is a time that's worth burning a timeout over. What I don't like is a timeout on 1st-and-15 because they're about to get a delay of game coming out of the huddle. That everything I just laid out for you is completely indefensible and unprofessional by Matt Eberflus. Just absolutely appalling, and it's really troublesome when you consider what he billed himself as coming in as the CEO style coach who was going to be kind of running everything, have coordinators, you know, that almost were autonomous because they were going to be competent, and you just focus on being the head coach, running the team, calling timeouts, going for it on fourth down, going for two or not going for two, in-game decisions, you know, you make the big decisions, and keep everybody organized and on the same page, and they are, nobody's on the same page.
I would love to know what Richard Hightower's role was in the decision, Jason, because, you know, Eberflus isn't turning around having conversations with the place kicker. That is Richard Hightower's job, and their special teams had a bad enough day as it is. You mentioned the block kick in the first half. Also, DeAndre Carter muffs a punt at the 15-yard line. He's standing there literally yelling at his teammates to get away from the ball, and the ball checks up and hits him in the foot and gets recovered by the Vikings. I mean, Jason, those are, I mean, that cost the Bears 10 points right there. You know, when we talk about whether or not I'm going to do a little narration right now as we are sitting here recording the podcast. A cleaning worker has come into the suite that we're sitting in, Jason, and was cleaning a toilet and flushed the toilet twice. So this is my assurance from me to you, our listener, that Jason and I are not using the bathroom while conducting a podcast.
I can think of some things to flush after this game, though.
Hey, look at that transition. That's a professional transition.
Man, Pat, this is just not an isolated instance of Matt Eberflus appearing as though this job is just too much for him. There's too much to keep track of. There's too much to keep on top of. And his equation of, I'm going to spend 50% of my time on defense and 50% of my time on offense and 50% of my time on special teams and 50% of my time working on in-game calls, it doesn't add up.
You and I don't believe, though, that they're going to fire him mid-season.
No. That, I mean, the time to do that was after the New England game, and they kind of let Shane Waldron be the scapegoat for that.
And also, like, if you have Caleb who's improving, it would seem counterproductive, big picture, to mess with that.
Don't move anything that's around Caleb Williams right now.
And also,
don't,
what are you going to do? Promote Richard Hightower?
No, there's no. Like, I'm not going down that road. But it's. I mean, for me, it's a done deal. It's a case closed at the end of the season. I mean, there's no discussion to have about it for me. It's obvious.
Yeah, I mean,
it should be first thing Monday morning after the Green Bay game.
I mean, unless they win every game the rest of the season and Caleb Williams throws for 400 yards. Caleb Williams,
by the way. Even then, are you going to get fooled by that and think, Matt Eberflus is the guy?
We're not having this hypothetical discussion.
Come on.
Jason, Caleb Williams in the third quarter today set the Bears' rookie passing record. I think it's good to remind the people that he's still got a full six games to go, and if he stays healthy, he'll obliterate that. Shoot, he might be the first Bears passer to ever throw for 4,000 yards.
I was going to tell you, before you brought that up, I was going to tell you that he actually does have a shot at that. He went into today, it's a long shot, he went in today needing to average like 280-something yards per game, mm-hmm. which prior to today, I think he'd only hit that twice so far. So, I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot. It's more than the top quarterbacks are averaging week to week, usually.
My favorite part about
but he could
even bringing this up, and the only reason I really do bring it up is I think it shows you, A, the fact that he's been healthy. He's taken every snap of theirs. And B, the fact that he is getting time on task, as Matt Eberflus likes to say. They're giving him reps. And, boy, I mean, a couple weeks ago when somebody had floated, well, why not sit Caleb Williams? I mean, the reason you and I had laughed at that was because that's the opposite of what you want to do right now. If anything, giving Caleb reps is more important than the outcome of any given week. And as long as he can stay upright and keep going out there and he's got teammates that are still trying, I think the next 6 weeks could be really productive for him on an individual level. And the better he plays, the more attractive this job is going to be to other people, I'm guessing.
I never understood the idea of sitting him. That never made sense to me. And I talked to somebody actually in the building that told me that this report that players were asking about sitting him and going to Tyson Bagent was just completely not true, that it didn't happen.
Right.
Which, that's plausible. Right. That is much more plausible to me than the idea that it did happen. I think that the more reps Caleb Williams gets, the better. And I think to your point about him going into 2025, that is going to be a big difference. The Bears will, it appears, be repeating the same cycle that they've done before where new coach gets the old quarterback. But this is such a different talent than Justin Fields or Mitch Trubisky. While that will be true, that the new coach is going to be inheriting the old quarterback, there will be a line out the door of new coaches that want this old quarterback. They will be thrilled to have him.
Jason, there was a line out the door of coordinators who wanted to coach this new quarterback, who I'm sure sat there and said, boy, if I can get Caleb up and running in 2 years, I'll probably be the next Sean McVay or be the next hot head coaching candidate, the next Ben Johnson. And the Bears, with their choice of all nine of those candidates, I believe, that they talked to in person, chose the guy who didn't make it 10 weeks. Real quick, Jason, then we'll go. Patrick Manley, the Bears' long snapper, tweets in the middle of the third quarter something along the lines of, "This team has quit," which is a pretty bold statement. I think a former player knows how damning that is.
And it's a tough one to pull the pin on that.
Yeah, and then, later he, retweets it, or he replies to himself with, you're saying we still
got just joking. Just joking.
Yeah, just walks it back a little bit. The Bears, all these heartbreaking losses, the one thing you can say is that, they've been in it the whole time. Is there a chance the dam breaks here on Thursday?
Oh, my gosh, yes. I mean, there's a chance it does any time. The interesting dynamic, though, Patrick, is you have Caleb Williams clearly going up, and yet you have the defense and kind of a big chunk of the rest of the team really teetering.
Yep. It's the worst two-week span their special teams have had all year. It's the worst two-week span their defense has had since – take away the Hail Mary since probably all year as well. Yep.
The thing that you can't – the variable that is impossible to predict is Caleb right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could sit here and say they're going to be an underdog in every game remaining, which I don't know if that'll be true. It probably would be true. Maybe the Seattle Thursday night game is a push. But the thing is, Caleb can play like this. Mm-hmm. He's got it in him. We've seen it. We've seen it before today, but we certainly saw it against Minnesota. I think this was his best game. I mean, it was –
yeah, it would. No, I do too. And I'm reaching.
It was super impressive. And if he plays like this, and the rest of the team is what we thought they should be on paper, they will have a chance against almost anybody. Probably not the Lions. Probably not Super Bowl contending teams like that. Mm-hmm. But just about everybody. I mean, the 49ers and the Packers and the Vikings, I think. But you can't have Caleb finally turns it around right as everything else falls off a cliff.
Jason, their running backs ran 15 times for 37 yards.
The Bears running backs? Yeah.
Their defense gave up 7 yards of play. And they lost in overtime because their quarterback played his ass off. Like, that's that. When you talk about Caleb making up for everything, we saw that today. We have a non-existent run game, a defense that struggled, and a quarterback that saved them. And what's annoying, I think, for Bears fans is that the whole structure of this was, we're not going to need Caleb to save us. We're going to build something so firm that we can ride the ups and downs of a rookie quarterback, and nothing will truly be his fault if it goes poorly. And if it goes well, it'll be because everybody's really good. And that didn't happen.
Yeah, and if Matt Eberflus had come to us before the season and said, "Hey, guys, I'm really tired of living up here. I mean, I want to get fired. What's the formula?"
Right.
I would say... once Caleb Williams is playing well, then fail in every other area. Like, losing a game like this where the rookie quarterback is clicking and you're not coming through for him in these other ways, you're asking for it, Pet.
Can I read you a quote from Kevin Byard before we go, Jason?
Yeah.
I talked to him after the game, and he said, and I quote, "Once upon a time earlier in the year, our defense was playing well and our offense was still figuring it out. Now they've been having a role in putting up points and we're not holding up our end of the bargain." I think that's a pretty good way to put it.
Yeah. And that's, they've had injuries. So they lost Andrew Billings, starting defensive tackle. Jaquan Brisker, a safety, a big player for them. But they still have a lot of good players, Pat. They still got Sweat. They still got excellent corners. They still got good linebackers. And they've got a defensive-minded head coach who should be able to make the difference on that side. My expectation of Matt Nagy and Matt Eberflus and anybody else is be a good manager and CEO in the head coach role, but also specifically make a difference on your side of the ball. You should be among the best of the best on your side of the ball. That doesn't look like, to me, a defense that is run by a guy who is the best of the best.
I think maybe we could have argued 3 weeks ago that over the past calendar year, I thought it was pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
And it's falling off week after week, and you and I talked about it in the tunnel after the game. You look at the number of points they gave up. I mean, today it's a lot, but, 30 in five quarters. And the Bears defense, to the eye test, to my eye test, looks worse than the stats they've given up the last 3 weeks.
They look unsteady.
Yeah.
They look like you can't count on them in a big moment. Like, you can't count on them when Sam Darnold gets hurt and they send Nick Mullins in on a 3-13, a 3rd-and-13.
Yeah, and he hits a little crosser and lets the receiver go.
Or Jalen Johnson falls down at the wrong time or commits pass interference at the wrong time. Like, there's just these lapses at terrible times. Hockenson got the Vikings down in scoring range late in the game against Byard. They're just unsteady.
How good was – I mean, and the Vikings defense – or Vikings offense over the middle, I thought, was really good. Especially in overtime, you've got Tremaine Edmonds kind of lurking 15 yards behind the line of scrimmage and not making an impact at all. Jason, you want to call it? We got a short week, too.
The season or the podcast?
The podcast.
Oh, okay. Yeah, just the episode, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
We'll be back.
We need to save our voices to come back later in the week to get you ready for the Thanksgiving game. Until then, you can follow Jason, Mark Potash, and myself on social media. Check us out at the Sun-Times website. And if you live in town, buy a paper. He's Jason. I'm Pat. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back again real soon.